Jesus, we're going to be referring to some very well-known verses this morning. And I ask that you would speak to us all in a new way. It's a known fact, you know, that we are paralyzed if we don't trust. You probably wouldn't leave your front door if you didn't trust. In all sorts of ways. And particularly it's so in trusting people. People study this whole idea of trust, and one particular group has suggested that there are probably three aspects that are required in trust. The first is authenticity, or honesty, or integrity. Does a person's words and actions match? The second is empathy. Do they care about me personally? And the third is competence. Do they deliver what they promise? And I say Paul ticks all the boxes, and I'm going to explain why. Now, we can expect that Paul would be a target of critics. I mean, he has been criticized uphill and down Dale since the time he opened his mouth, because he is a person with opinions. He's a contender for what he believes. He's a frontline messenger for a new faith. And Paul is also an easy target due to his large presence in the New Testament, in the Bible. Estimated that he wrote 2,000 verses in the New Testament. So he's been described in all sorts of ways, and he's been applauded and he's been hated. But I imagine anybody that has put their head up above the crowd would have received applause and hate mail. I imagine even Taylor Swift has her critics. Goes with the territory. If you stand up, if you speak up, if you become somebody, you will be criticized. And this is where trust must come in. So opinions vary very widely about Paul. But I want to say that Paul wrote what he lived. And he lived what he wrote. There is no difference between his life and his writings. Some people write better than they live, and others live better than they write. But Paul, writing or living, was the same Paul. And whatever one might say about Paul, I think Paul was a philanthropist. And this is important to know, because Paul set the stage for a completely transformative new way of living, an entirely new development in the history of the world, with the largest and most far-reaching influence to this day. Paul's writings are the choice of reading for many Christians, because they explain how this could be so In fact, many Christians read little of the Old Testament and would rather read the Gospels and Paul. But Paul was a man who was longing to help others. He was a lover of people, a philanthropos, philanthropy. To put it another way, if you were in need, Paul would be the best friend you could ever hope to have. One of the most quoted verses, passages in the Bible is Psalm 23. But I think there's another one that's probably equal to it, and that's 1 Corinthians 13. And that might be a bit small for you. It's small for me, but it's good. Oh, it's good for you. Heavens, why should I even bother? I'm not going to comment on it. I'm just going to leave it there for a moment. For you to soak it in a little, as much as you can with words on a screen. I want to tell you, Paul wrote these words, not Jesus. And he lived what he wrote. A lot of people love the theological side of Paul. I want to forget that this morning. I'm not even going to touch on it. I want to talk about Paul, the lover of people, the philanthropist. There's another list I want to give you, and again, I don't want to comment on it. But as we move from this list to the next list, I want to suggest to you that this list that we have in front of our eyes, that we've read how many times? Countless times, used in weddings and so forth. Maybe we could say here that Paul sat for the portrait that Jesus painted. Paul sat for the portrait that Jesus painted. Paul sat at the feet of the Master and learned from the Master, although he never met the Master. So here's another lot. I said there would be some stuff that would be familiar. Once again, those of you who read their New Testament regularly and come to church regularly, which you are doing today. Hallelujah. I was wondering whether I'd be speaking to myself, which I often do. And we've heard and seen these things spoken about. They're wonderful. They're incredible. But it's not my place this morning to dwell on them. There's a few more. I just want you to get an impression, right? Because who wrote them? Paul wrote them. This theological master. Because I think we most often turn to Paul as a person to identify our doctrines or give us our doctrines. Again, I don't want to even touch on that. Appointed, aren't they? These words of counsel. How do they strike you? You know, they could hit us like a drone strike, destroying all our defenses that are raised against them our excuses failing by their very force. Or they could be like a well-used set of clothes. You're very familiar with them. You wear them every day. Or maybe it's a bit of both. Maybe some, I think I got it right. It's a good set of clothes. And others, I'm not sure whether I really want to know because it's a bit hard. It's not my personality. It's not my way of doing things. And so they need to come to us like a drone strike and destroy those defences. It might take years. It might take, I don't know. But such a list as this is, or can be, guilt-inducing. Because it's all here, you know. You list them out, Peter, and it's so easy to do that. And all of these one and others, and they all are so good. And I know as a Christian I should all be right into them. But I'm not. And so I'm a bit guilty about it. Intimidated. But that's not Paul's intention. You know why? Because he didn't give us a list. I gave you the list. He gave out each one individually, singularly, right through, scattered through all of his letters, to this church, to that person, to that group, to that issue, one at a time, as his heart reached out in loving people. So guilt-inducing and intimidating is certainly not Paul's intention. So the list can be a nudge, not a list. You read them, you're nudged by something. You're nudged by one of the phrases, I suggest, as you read through Scripture or even as you see them on a screen like that. I like to think they're a nudge. Sometimes they're a kick in the pants, but mostly they're a nudge. Because we want to do the right, don't we? We want to be good people. We want to follow this sort of thing as best we can. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't like that, I'm sure. But we are faced with a decision when we read these things, either singularly or as a corporate body. And we're faced with the decision, will I or won't I? Will I be caring? Will I be loving? Will I be helpful? Will I be forgiving? Will I or won't I? In any situation, remember, all of these are situationally present. They're not in a list. They're situated to people and places and churches who needed a nudge. Do we need a nudge? I personally would like to say that this is the way of discipleship, of a follower of Jesus. You give me these and nothing else, you don't even need any more doctrine. I say, well, that's enough. I can follow Jesus the best I can with some of these, hopefully all of these somewhere, somehow. And if that's not being a follower or a disciple of Jesus, I don't know what is. So here we see Paul is like Jesus. Or Jesus is Paul's mirror. But again, Paul never met Jesus, but neither have we. Because besides these things, Paul writes, the care of all the churches. Now, this is obviously out of context. The context is because he says, besides these things, what things? Well, very quickly, His extraordinary life involved terrible hardship, and that's what he was elaborating on. Such as he was whipped 5 times, he was beaten 3 times with Roman magistrates' wooden rods, lictors they called them. He was stoned. He was shipwrecked 3 times. He drifted in the open ocean for 24 hours after a shipwreck. He faced danger every day from people, all the geography, all the weather, and every other hardship imaginable for a traveller who travelled without any armed escort. And then finally he was imprisoned and he was put to death. He carried the care of all the churches. Obviously he cared about himself, but listing these things, and you'll see them in 2 Corinthians, he says, but, the thing that really I cared about was people. Now, the English word care that we use in our Bibles has a variety of meanings, and there's so many Hebrew and Greek words in the Bible translated by this one English expression, care. But it has a lot of compounds, and it's difficult to select which to choose in terms of translating the Bible or interpreting the scriptures as we do. And you go from various Bible translations and they use the word care in different ways. So I've got just four here which are used regularly. One is anxiety. Another is concern. Another is worry. And then another one is fearful. Like people are fearful of the storm, so they stay home. The story of Martha and Mary use that word in the Gospels. Martha was upset over all the work she had to do. You know the story well, most of you, and said, "Lord, don't you care? Aren't you anxious, concerned, worried, or fearful about me? My sister has left me to do all the work by myself. Tell her to come and help me." And the Lord answered, "Martha, Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled. You care over many things." Now, Paul was a person who had a commercial-sized intellect, but also had a commercial-sized emotional capacity. Paul cared deeply. Because what would you say, and how would you assess a person that said this? "We weren't aloof with you. We took you just as you were. We were never patronizing, never condescending, but we cared for you the way a mother cares for her children. We loved you dearly, not content to just pass on the doctrine. We wanted to give you our hearts, and we did." That was a part of a letter to Thessalonians. What sort of person writes like that? Paul wrote like that. A philanthropist. Paul was a great includer. just like Jesus. They were both wonderful philanthropists. In a Jewish context, as of course Jesus and Paul lived, a very definite social strata. Jesus brought this out very often and tried in his actions to demolish it, and sometimes by his words. For Paul, it was the Roman system mostly that he had to face, and the Roman system was probably worse than the Jewish system, where inclusion was of no account. Elites ruled with godlike power and authority, and Paul stood out as a beacon of hope for the trammeled and cast off and ignored and inconsequential people. If there is one another so powerful, it's like being noticed for the first time. One another, I notice you, and therefore I do things for you. I think this way for you. I feel this way for you. One another. It's very inclusive. There's no place for strata. So, how do you like Paul now? Think better of him? Would you like to be like Paul? Because Paul was like Jesus in these things. So one leads to another. Interesting, you know, and it's very rarely mentioned, although I have heard it mentioned in sermons, that he has this constant reference to individuals. I mean, named individuals. In the warmest terms, about 76 people are mentioned by Paul in his letters. Paul may have been a loner as the leader of a revolution way out front, but he was not alone, and he made sure he mentioned people wherever he could. His love and his inclusivity stand out, particularly with women. So, in plain sight, I want to suggest to you, which is so often passed over, is the secret of Paul's success. Maybe it's theology, but I'll leave that aside today, was his lover of people. If they hadn't trusted him, they would not have believed him. But they did believe him. And they did follow him, and they followed his teachings, and they followed through to today. With, 2.5 billion Christians. It wouldn't have happened if he hadn't loved them. If they hadn't felt his care and his concern that what I'm saying to you might be difficult, might be different, but his love won through. It's good to know when you're talking to non-Christian people or people in your neighborhood who don't really want to know the details. They just want to know whether you love them and care for them and want to help them. Details can come later. Now, the book of Romans, which is really the par excellence of his theological treatise, and it is certainly an outstanding and scholarly explanation of Christianity. And people have studied it and written about it for 2,000 years. And they've carried away it from its depths of meaning and poured forth its sermons and books. I bought a series of books on Romans once by Martin Lloyd-Jones, who was a famous preacher in London, Westminster Chapel, I think. 14 volumes on Romans. Cost me the earth. That's no wonder I'm still poor. And I basically gave them away, sent them to a second-hand bookshop, and 12 boxes of books, and they gave me $50 for them all. Anyway, beside the point. The reason that Martin Lloyd-Jones transcribed 12, 14 volumes of books. It's because he spoke on Romans for 12 years, 366 talks. So Romans is important. It's a sort of university level teaching. But in that, we can, might I remind you, lose sight of the bookends, the beginning and the end of Romans. The beginning of Romans says this, as part of the beginning. Every time I think of you in my prayers, he writes to the Romans, which is practically all the time, I ask God to clear the way for me to come and see you. The longer this waiting goes on, the deeper the ache. So I want to be there to deliver God's gift in person, because he hadn't been there in person, and watch you grow stronger right before my eyes. Well, the end of the book goes something like this. Well, it doesn't go something like this. It's chapter 16. And here is when he just explodes with naming people and showing his inclusivity with them. 32 people crammed into this last chapter, 9 of them women. Unprecedented in Roman society. He wants people to be recognized. He wants people to be remembered. And they have been for 2,000 years. People that you would never have met. Most people would never have even thought about. But he wanted them remembered because of certain things they were part of and did. What a wonderful man he was. As they say, on small hinges, great doors are opened. And I think that hinge is trust, bounded by love. Phileo anthropos, lover of people. We think of a philanthropist as a person who gives their money away to charity. It's a lot more than that. So, as John Buchanan loves us to do, gives us a spike at the end to think about or to do, and I'm going to do that right now. Act on it. Ooh, John, you'll be proud of me. Who would you want to mention or to include as significant people in your life? It's a good exercise. I've done it partly in the past. I've written to people in the past who have been significant to me. So these are the three suggestions. Write in your usual permanent place. I have to include a diary or journal as well as your thing, your digital thing. If on your device, write, give thanks, and then delete it if you wish, but write it. And if you can, either by post, which is wonderful to get a letter these days, it's almost finding gold. Send it to the person or persons, either with your name or anonymously. Just say, really appreciate you. I remember back such and such a time, a woman came to me years ago who, after many years, used to live in the same city that we lived, and we had a little to do with her. She was a neighbour, and we took her kids to Sunday school and so on. Years later, she contacted me and said, you don't know how much that meant to me. And I had to say, you don't know how much that meant to me to hear what you said about me. It's very reciprocal. It's a one another. would be wonderful, wouldn't it? Think of someone that's been meaningful in your life. One of these 32 people in chapter 16 of Romans. And give them a tinkle and send a letter or press a button or whatever you have to do to contact them. Is that a good idea? Well, Daniel nodded. We got one on board. Kevin's two. Any advance on two, three? Good. Okay, very good. All right, well, I'll pass it back to somebody. Philip, I think we're going to have communion, which is a great one another thing. Amen.